Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me, the chef and the ballerina. That's the title of the program today. I suspect you're asking yourself, what on earth is this all about? Is there a chef who dances like a ballerina? Or is there a ballerina pirouetting with the pots and pans somewhere? Actually, the only thing that this chef and this ballerina have in common is that they both have vision problems. So let's start with the chef. This information comes from NPR.org, and this program was originally heard on All Things Considered in August of 2015. It was written by Cheryl Corley. The headline reads, Chef Wants Diners to Remember Her Cooking, Not Her Blindness. Many chefs dream of opening their own restaurant, but Laura Martinez faced an obstacle that many people thought would make that dream impossible to fulfill. The 31-year-old chef is blind. It took 2 years for Martinez to open a restaurant called La Diosa. This is a tiny restaurant in Chicago. And she opened it in 2015. And a note from me here, a side note, this has closed very recently, unfortunately. So the article continues, in addition to her white chef's jacket, Martinez wears dark sunglasses when she works. The soft-spoken chef traces her passion for cooking to a few things. First, there were the knives. She says, I always loved knives. In fact, when I was a child, they were my favorite toy. Later in college, she didn't like the cafeteria food. She said, I was used to homemade meals from my mother and good food. So when I got this weird food, I didn't want to eat it. And I guess that's when I started to focus on flavors and smells. The restaurant's name, La Diosa, means the goddess in Spanish. It's a modest space. Pictures and newspaper articles about Chef Martinez line one wall. There are 5 tables and some stools near a counter at the front window. Despite its size, La Diosa is a full-service restaurant that's open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Martinez says her menu is Mexican comfort food with a French touch. In addition to quiches, omelets, quesadillas, and empanadas, there's also her own creation, which she calls tartitzas. She says, I call it tartitza because it's kind of between a tart and a pizza, but the dough is delicate and light, but flaky at the same time. Martinez's husband, Maurilio Ortega, works in the restaurant as well. They jokingly call him the sous chef, Mori. As Martinez rolls out the dough for the tartitza, he gets the other ingredients ready, including Martinez's special sauce. Martinez lost her eyesight to cancer when she was a baby. In college, she pursued a degree in psychology. She knew there were blind psychologists. But when she later decided to go to culinary school, she looked for blind chefs and couldn't find one. I said, oh my God, Martinez recounts, this is going to be interesting because I like challenges. It was indeed a challenge. She got help from an attorney to get into culinary school. During an internship, her supervisor was not supportive. Martinez got a break, though, when the now late Charlie Trotter, one of Chicago's most acclaimed chefs, watched her work, tasted her food, and offered her a job. Martinez worked at Trotter's restaurant until it closed in 2012. And then, with no prospects in sight, she decided it was time to work toward her dream of opening a restaurant. A business advisor whose name is Andrew Fogarty was flabbergasted at first by the idea of a blind chef, but then he worked with Martinez to develop a business plan. A quote from Fogarty, Chef had the name the first day we met. She had the idea for her dream. She had the menu. All she needed to do was execute. Chicago Tribune restaurant critic Phil Vettel says a restaurant kitchen is a hectic madhouse, even for someone who was sighted. He said it's kind of incredible that Martinez is running La Diosa. Vettel says there is intense competition in Chicago's restaurant industry, but that Martinez's former association with Chef Trotter is tremendously helpful. Here's a quote. The food community and customers are very aware of names and reputations. It's an immediate statement of legitimacy, Vettel says. Martinez says she knows that business is a gamble. Even so, she already has been an inspiration to others. Another blind chef who won first place on a television cooking show sent out a message on Twitter telling Martinez so. In the restaurant, after using her talking cash register to ring up a customer, Martinez says she has another wish. A quote from her, "Now that I am known for being the blind chef, I want people to look beyond that." What she really wants people who eat in La Diosa to remember, she says, is her food. And as I said, the restaurant closed in May of this year. That means she had pretty much a 3-year run. So we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled for more information about Laura Martinez, the blind chef. The article just mentioned a chef who was on a television program. I found information for you about that. This title is called Blind Cooking, Tips from Actual Chefs. Actually, there's 3 chefs that are mentioned here. Their names, so that you can get used to them, Christine Ha, spelled H-A, Sue Pallett, and Neil Barnfather. 3 chefs give you tips. This comes from BBC.com. First, an introduction to before the tip says, a blind contestant has won the 3rd season of the U.S. version of the television cooking competition, MasterChef, highlighting the difficulties faced by blind chefs. Emma Tracy, who's a producer on the BBC Ouch Disability blog and talk show, who has been blind since birth, says cooking provides many challenges. Christine Ha, who was 33 and gradually lost her vision over a decade, won the 3rd season of the MasterChef competition after impressing the judges, who included Gordon Ramsay. Ha says she has to depend a lot more on the other senses to cook, taste, smell, and how ingredients feel at different stages of cooking. To taste everything and to know how a perfectly cooked steak or fish feels is useful advice for any cook. So in what other ways do blind chefs manage? Here comes some tips for you. First one, strangely titled, Hazelnuts Top Left. Hazelnuts Top Left. On MasterChef Ha and the program MasterChef, Ha is allowed an assistant to guide her around the unfamiliar kitchen and collect ingredients for her. Other than that, she is expected to follow the same rules as her sighted rivals. But when cooking at home, she has no need for such assistance. Like many blind cooks, she knows her own kitchen inside out, and everything is always put back in its place. Tom Lewis, head chef at Monachile Manor in Perthshire in Great Britain, remembers the need for strict organization from when his mother, Jean, ran the restaurant's kitchen. She started it after losing her vision, and it was a smoothly run operation. Here's a quote from him. You have to put ingredients back in the same place each time. In Mum's kitchen, everything was as it should be. Hazelnuts in the top left of the pantry. Sugar, bottom right. And thus the tip, hazelnuts, top left, everything in its place. The next tip, audio labeling. Many of the men and women that cookery expert Sue Pallett advises at the online blindness community called the Accessible Friends Network, many of the men and women are not able to memorize the entire contents of their pantry, so they must find a non-visual way to label items. Blind from birth, Chef Sue Pallett uses Braille labels, but over the years, she has developed a number of strategies to help others identify their ingredients. Here's a quote. If there are 2 containers which feel exactly the same, some people will put an elastic band on one and a piece of sticky tape on the other. Or tactile magnetic letters can be useful when labeling tins. More high-tech options are available, allowing the blind cook to record an audio message on a special label, which is then attached to the container. As well as identifying the contents, this message can also include additional information such as use-by dates and even cooking instructions. These are the audio messages. The third tip from these chefs, listen to the sponge cake. Yeah, I really said it. Listen to the sponge cake. Smell, taste, touch, and even hearing are used by blind cooks to identify similar ingredients, like using icing sugar instead of corn flour, for instance. This would have disastrous consequences for a dish. Our chef, Sue Pallett, who teaches blind people how to cook, says that if you have a refined sense of hearing, it's sometimes possible to tell that a sponge cake is done cooking when it stops ticking or stops sizzling. She is keen to point out, however, that this is not by any means a foolproof method and that timing is actually more reliable. A quote, as blind cooks, we are not able to continually open the oven door and check whether a cake is done, so I use a timer. When time is up, I press my fingers down lightly on the top of the cake, and if it springs back easily, then it's done. The baking guru Mary Berry also recommends this method. I've been watching her on the Great British Baking Show competition, Mary Berry. The next tip, smell the garlic. A quote, my sense of smell has really come into play since I lost my sight, says Christine Ha, who writes the food blog called Blind Cook. She continues, I know when garlic is just fragrant enough and when it's going to tip over to being too burnt or too bitter. With a pan on the stove, I add some water, and if it splashes in a certain way, I know that it's hot enough for whatever I'm cooking. The next tip, mark the temperature dials. Sue Pallett uses small, brightly colored pieces of sticky back rubber pieces called, she calls them bump-ons. I've heard them called bump dots. I used bump dots myself. They come in many shapes and sizes and can be stuck on anything, including the temperature dials of cookers and kitchen timers. Then all the blind cook must do is line the cooker's knob's edge up with the bump dots. Next tip, have a chopping system. Preparing vegetables requires the right tools and a good technique, says Sue Pallett. She says, choose a short-bladed, unserrated kitchen knife with an ergonomic handle and a good chopping board. Blind foodie, whose name is Neil Barnfather, adheres to a strict system for preparing vegetables, especially while hosting dinner parties. And his favorite kitchen utensil is his knife sharpener. He says, a sharp blade is essential for chopping accurately. When chopping, I tend to put the unchopped things on the left, work in progress in the middle, and the finished product on the right. This saves time and avoids confusion. The next tip, saucepan, not a frying pan. Another aspect of cooking which should be considered risky if you can't see is working with hot oil. Sue Pallett has found a way around this problem. Instead of a frying pan, she uses deep-sided saucepans. And a quote, if you fry in a saucepan, everything is contained really well, and nothing is going to fly out over the top and cause a mess. I use a long-handled, heat-resistant slotted spoon to slide underneath the ingredients, gently turn them over, and spread them out again. I always face my saucepan handles to the same side. That way, I know where they are, and there's no chance of me knocking a hot pot off the stove. Next tip, carry as little as possible. When serving a meal to guests, Neil Barnfather's secret weapon is a hostess trolley. And I've been thinking about this after reading the tip. I think this hostess trolley must have some kind of a heat plate inside of it, because he starts out by saying, the hostess trolley keeps food warm so that I can cook one thing at a time. It also saves me having to carry a loaded tray through to the dining room, which, with a young family or guests moving around, might not be a safe thing to do. He also draws the line at serving gravy to guests while at the table. He opts instead to leave it on the heated serving plate in the center of the table so that they can pour their own gravy. The next tip, using talking gadgets. All three of our cook experts use various gadgets to get the job done. Many of these are regular pieces of equipment which has been repurposed. For example, unable to go down the usual road of checking his meat by seeing if the juices run clear, Neil Barnfather, uses a meat tenderizer, which looks like a mini cheese grater with a hammer-like handle. If, when you push it into the meat, it springs back easily, then the meat is cooked. He says, I use oven mitts, which go much higher up my arm than regular mitts, so that I don't burn the inside of my wrist when taking things in and out of the oven, says Ha. She also has a talking meat thermometer with her in the Master Chef kitchen to ensure that her food is heated through fully. This is just one type of specialist equipment for people who are visually impaired. When measuring ingredients for cakes and pastries, all three cooks rely on hearing to use their talking weighing scales. These devices speak measurements in a low, clear voice as ingredients are added to the bowl attached. For liquids, Neil Barnfather says that the talking measuring cups available are not nearly accurate enough to use for him. Instead, he remembers how much each of his measuring cups contains, and he places a clean finger on the inside of the container as he pours. The next idea, serve up using a clock face. You've probably heard this before. Like many blind people, Neil Barnfather thinks of the plate as a clock face and divides it into quadrants. He says, I like to know that my meat is at 12 o'clock, my vegetables at 3, and my potatoes maybe at, let's say, 6 o'clock. To serve, he plates up the meat or fish first, and he then arranges the side dishes around it. He finds that an ice cream scoop provides invaluable for serving things like mashed potatoes. So these are some chefs from NPR program, from the Blind Cooking from BBC.com. The next article, we're switching now from the blind chef to the article titled, What Do You Do with a Blind Ballerina? This information comes from the National Federation of the Blind. It was written by Deja Powell. And from the editor here, who says, Deja Powell is an orientation and mobility instructor for blind children, and she serves as a program manager for the Professional Development and Research Institute on Blindness at Louisiana Tech University. Recently, she got married to her fiancé when he returned from a deployment in Iraq. Deja Powell. She starts out by saying in her article, my mom grew up as a dancer. When she was 12, she started teaching as an assistant dance teacher. Shortly after my parents were married, my dad built them a new house with a dance studio in the basement. When I arrived, a baby girl, I was a dance teacher's dream. I left the hospital in tights and a leotard and leg warmers. This was back in the 1980s. That's pretty much what I wore from then on. I was the little ballerina my mom had always dreamed about. You can perhaps imagine the heartbreak my parents experienced 9 months later into my life when they were told that I was blind. The doctor predicted a dismal future. My parents' dream of their little dancer probably faded into the distance. However, as soon as I started to crawl and then to walk, their dream revived. I loved music, and I loved dancing to it. When my mom went down to the studio to teach, I would cry at the top of the basement stairs. I badly wanted to dance, but I couldn't join the class. Not because I was blind, because I wasn't quite yet 2 years old. When I finally did turn two, I started to dance in the dance classes. Mostly, my mom just let me move around in class as I chose. That's what two-year-old students usually do anyway. Outside of class, mom helped me move to an actual beat. Holding my hands, she danced with me in the living room, in the kitchen, in the studio, and out in the backyard. I quickly picked up on the rhythm of music. I knew how to work the stereo before I could talk. I loved to dance, and I danced all day. As I got a little older, my mom began to spend more one-on-one time with me. She taught me specific positions for my feet, and she showed me where to place my arms. At first, she literally put my body into the correct positions. As we worked, I learned the ballet terminology, plié, first position, jeté, pirouette, arabesque, fourth position. I knew what each term meant, and I could perform each one of them. Mav even did flashcards with me to help me learn the names of all the ballet positions. Whenever she announced a step in class, I knew exactly what she was talking about. I began to excel in dance as I got older. I was long and lean and just fit to be a dancer. I always felt that I was meant to dance. As I became more competitive, I spent more and more time at the studio with my mom and my classmates. I learned arm movements and specific placement for my feet for all my routines. At one point, I was spending about 10 hours a week in the studio. That was where I wanted to be. In performances and competitions, my teammates and I strategized about how I would find my spot, keep the formation, and get to where I needed to go. Sometimes they communicated with me verbally, telling me to stop, keep going, or move to the right. Sometimes the routine was designed so that I didn't have to move far from my spot. I could still do many formations this way, and it helped make the transitions for me easier. A dance teacher with a blind student can figure out what works best based on the student's strengths. Talk about what works most smoothly. Don't be afraid to try out several ideas before you actually figure out what works. Try to be as verbally expressive as possible while you teach. Plan one-on-one time to work with a blind student outside of class. If you are the parent of a blind child who wants to dance, there are ways that it can be done. As in any activity, you and your child may have moments of self-doubt. While I tried not to let my blindness affect my love for dance, there were moments when I did think about giving it all up. After all, you don't see many blind dancers. Was there really a place for me in the world of ballet? When I was 9 years old, I had the opportunity to perform in the halftime show at the Fiesta Bowl football championships in Phoenix, Arizona. It was my first huge dance milestone. We spent hours on the hot football field practicing the routine. At one point, I heard a teacher walk up to her student who was standing behind me. She told the student that she was positioning her arms the wrong way. The student said, "But I'm following the girl in front of me." "Oh, you really shouldn't follow her," the teacher said. "She's blind. She doesn't know what she's doing." Whoa, I felt crushed and the tears started rolling. It was the first time in my life that someone doubted me because of my blindness. I have never forgotten that terrible moment. I realize today that I have to set my own expectations and work on my own confidence because people will doubt me my whole life. Dancing became my escape from reality. When I danced, I felt like everyone else, and I actually felt like I belonged. I still find opportunities for dance today, such as yoga and Zumba, which is a combination of Latin dance and aerobics. Fortunately for me, I had parents who didn't really care what the professionals had to say. They found ways to adapt something I loved around my blindness. If your child wants to be a dancer, a gymnast, or an athlete, there are always ways that it can be done. There's a blind person out there somewhere who has done it already. I can't imagine my life without dance. I'm glad my parents didn't hold back on letting me dance because I'm blind. I'm grateful that they never thought I was too fragile or that dance was too dangerous or too difficult for me. Dance shaped me and gave me the confidence that is a huge part of finding success as a blind adult. So come on, let's dance. This comes from a website, www.teachingvisuallyimpaired.com. Next, I found the dance adaptations by Carmen Willings. Students who are blind or visually impaired can benefit from involvement in dance. Dance can improve students' movement, coordination, independence, and can also help the student increase their orientation and mobility skills. The student may have opportunities to participate in dance within their physical education program or may choose to take formal dance lessons. Dance instruction. These suggestions come from the Arts Education chapter in a book called Foundations of Education, written by Donna McNear. There are five suggestions here. If the student receives orientation and mobility services, the O&M specialist can collaborate with the gym teacher or dance instructor to determine the student's current skills and determine what skills need to be taught to provide the student with the skills to participate. The O&M instructor can also help to orient the student to the physical environment, whether it might be the gym or classroom or a stage. The next idea, students with low vision may need physical guidance or access to a dance instructor's movements. To do this, the student may need to be in close proximity to the instructor. Students who are blind will need to initially be motored through the movements. To do this, allow the student to place his or her hands on the teacher to understand the movement. Another tip, if a student has a difficult time with a particular movement, have the student practice the skill or each movement separately before trying to put it all together. Students may need feedback and repetition for new skills and for the more difficult moments. Another tip, provide the student with verbal prompts or auditory prompts like clapping or whistles or music, other sound sources, to help the student keep oriented during movement activities. And then you can fade that assistance as the student becomes more comfortable and would increase their independence. There's some movement skills that you can teach involving language, things like crawl, hop, lift, shuffle, things of a moving direction. The term skate, can you picture somebody skating? Upper body movements like shake your head, shrug, slouch. Finger movements like flick, pinch, scratch, or snap. There are all kinds of ways to move, like quickly, quietly, move sadly. This is good language for teaching dance instruction, and we can always follow the rule, dance like no one is watching. Now, instead of a quote to end this program, I want to tell you about a little paper cube I have for the little kids in my life. They toss it, and then they do whatever the top size of the cube tells them to do. So why don't you give these a try? First, melt in the sun. Are you melting? Jump like lightning. Fall like the rain. Freeze like snow. Freeze like ice. How would that look be different? Blow in the wind. Or twirl like a tornado. Such fun and a cute idea for encouraging creative movement in kids or adults. Thank you for listening, and I hope you keep dancing and have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.